one session. The Honorable Justice Stapleton presiding.
Good morning, good morning. Please be seated. We will start this morning's calendar with the Sowers versus Forest Hill case. It is number 58609. Parties ready to proceed?
On behalf of Forest Hills, yes, we are ready to proceed.
Patrick Millsap, on behalf of the appellants, and yes, we're ready to proceed.
Very well.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Patrick Millsap, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Mr. Rick Sowers. Your Honors, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of time for rebuttal. At its core, Your Honors, this case involves the District Court's misapplication of nuisance law, which effectively allowed a group of homeowners to circumvent the Nevada Legislature's clear intent to promote the development of renewable energy, including wind. Consequently, I'm going to discuss three primary reasons why this court should dissolve the permanent injunction at issue. First, the district court misapplied the law of nuisance. Second, there's no valid CC&R that prevents construction of Mr. Sowers' turbine. And third, public policy warrants dissolution of the injunction at issue. Nuisance law, Your Honors. The law does not provide a cause of action or nuisance based upon the aesthetic impact of a wind turbine. And that notion can be found within the case of Rankin versus FPL Energy LLC, wherein a Texas Court of Appeals considered whether or not a commercial wind farm would constitute a nuisance. And that case involved multiple 400-foot tall turbines. And the neighboring property owners complained that the turbines would destroy the area's scenic beauty, that they were aesthetically unpleasing, that they were an eyesore. And the court classified that evidence as a subjective emotional response to the aesthetic impact of the turbines, and ultimately concluded that the aesthetic of the turbines was not grounds to deem it a nuisance. And Texas is not alone in that sentiment, Your Honors. California has also held that the aesthetic impact of an object is not grounds to deem it a nuisance. For example, in the case of Oliver versus AT&T Wireless, a property owner sought to construct a 130-foot cell phone tower. His neighbor complained that the tower loomed over his property, cast a shadow over it, that it was an eyesore, and on that grounds it was a nuisance. And the California court held that the cell phone tower could not be a nuisance based upon its aesthetic impact. And that's exactly what we have here, Your Honors. We have a case in which the district court made a nuisance determination based upon aesthetic impact. Reason being, in the findings of fact and conclusions of law, the district court stated the most valuable evidence before it was the site inspection. And what occurred at the site inspection? The district court looked at a turbine similar to that of Mr. Sowers, and by looking at it, assess its aesthetics, and then said, the aesthetic of this turbine is a nuisance. However, the law does not provide a cause of action for nuisance based upon aesthetic impact.
Mr. Millsap, assuming your argument's correct, can the court, in a case in which the use is permitted by law, nevertheless enjoin it as a nuisance if it finds that there are other things in combination with aesthetic drawbacks that make the use unreasonable, such as noise, diminution in value? Are those factors that this panel should consider in writing an opinion about this subject?
Well, Your Honor, Rankin actually addressed that. And in the case of Rankin, the Court of Appeals in Texas stated that aesthetics should not be a consideration when determining whether or not a wind turbine is a nuisance. However, there could be other reasons why the turbine would be a nuisance. Your Honor mentioned noise. However, noise was not an issue in this case. At the site inspection, the district court concluded that from about 100 feet away, the turbine produced no more than 5 decibels of noise. So noise was not the controlling factor in this nuisance determination. Instead, it was based upon aesthetic. And as I stated, aesthetics cannot be grounds to deem something, specifically a turbine, a nuisance.
Wasn't there testimony about diminution in value?
That's correct, Your Honor. There was testimony about diminution in value. And again, Rankin considered that issue as well and stated it considered a case, Dallas Land and Loan Company versus Garrett, and stated the court found that a garage being built for residents of an apartment complex was not a nuisance because matters that annoy by being disagreeable, unsightly, and undesirable are not nuisances simply because they may, to some extent, affect the value of property. And that is 266 Southwest 3D, Penn Site 510. Moreover, Your Honors, if the reason that you're complaining...
There's a West Virginia case called Birch that takes a different position. Are you familiar with that case, counsel? And would you care to comment on its holding if you are?
I am familiar with the Birch case, Your Honor. And in that case, that was in consideration of a commercial wind farm, like Rankin, where in this case we're dealing with a private wind turbine that's not commercial. There's only one turbine and not many turbines. And in the Birch case, noise was an issue. So aesthetics, along with noise and a variety of other factors, ultimately led to the court's determination.
Well, the test adopted in that case doesn't seem to be that far apart from the test in Rankin. The test is whether unsightliness alone justifies interference, and the court said no, but an unsightly activity may be abated when it incurs in a residential area and is accompanied by other nuisances. So did the district court, in its order, fail to consider or evaluate other nuisances in combination with what it could characterize? I'm not sure I've ever heard of the word giganticism or whatever that he said of your client's potential project.
And that's correct, Your Honor. Again, the aesthetic impact of a turbine alone is not grounds to deem it a nuisance. And in the Texas case, in fact, the court stated that aesthetics should not even be considered when determining whether something is a nuisance because it's inherently subjective. And it's so inherently subjective, it becomes a nebulous standard upon which to base any nuisance ruling, even if it's considered as just a factor within a variety of other factors. And therefore, to the extent that you're considering aesthetics, a court should not be doing that because it's a purely subjective determination that the law of nuisance is not intended to sanction, Your Honors.
So, counsel, if we were to rule in your favor, that would be a reversal and we would be sending this case back down. By way of a definition or test for our district judges, since there does not appear to be any Nevada law in this area, how would we structure a succinct statement of the law of nuisance with respect to these type of structures?
Your Honors, if I were to phrase the holding, it would be something to the effect of the law does not provide a cause of action for nuisance based upon the aesthetic impact that a wind turbine creates on the surrounding area.
So our holding then would be limited to fact-specific, as here, the wind turbine situation.
To the extent that aesthetics are the factors or the fact-specific inquiries that the nuisance ruling is based upon, then yes, it would be a situation where aesthetics are not the basis to make a nuisance determination.
But how about adding the considerations that apparently at least two other states have made, and that is that when you combine aesthetics with other issues, perhaps there could be a nuisance that should be enjoined.
And other states have held that. You're correct, Your Honor. In New Jersey, I believe that's the case, and as well the Birch case in West Virginia. However, in Texas, I believe that's the more persuasive authority. Because I'll reiterate that, although other courts have considered aesthetics in conjunction with other factors, the Texas court properly reasoned that aesthetics should not be a factor when considering nuisance because it's too subjective. And California echoed that sentiment when it stated that, in the Oliver versus AT&T Wireless case, one person's taste could form the basis for depriving another person of the right to use his or her property, and nuisance law would be transformed into a license to the courts to set neighborhood aesthetic standards.
Mr. Millsap, in the record below in the court, I understood that a realtor who lived in the area testified that this project would create a diminution in value. Was that testimony refuted?
Yes, Your Honor. I shouldn't say it was refuted. It was objected to. However, there was not a counter expert that refuted whether or not it would create a diminution in property value.
So the record before us on that subject is limited to that testimony, and it was unfavorable to your client.
To the extent that testimony was admissible, yes, it's limited to that.
Okay. Do you challenge that the rejection of that objection on appeal?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Do you contest the rejection or the overruling of that objection on appeal?
Your Honor, at the time I objected to the admission of that testimony because it required an expert opinion, and I argued that Ms. Baldecki was not an expert. Moreover, she did not provide an expert report as required by NRCP 16.1. So, yes, I would object to the admissibility of that testimony regarding diminution in property values.
No, but I don't see that issue raised in your brief, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And then on the question of noise, I guess to some degree the issue there raises the question of whether this entire case is premature, since your client was still in the application or permitting process. But there seems to be some question about the level of noise from the information provided in the record. Could you go into that testimony, particularly the suggestion that it would exceed 55 decibels?
Certainly, Your Honor. There was conflicting testimony about the noise that this turbine could potentially create. But ultimately, the findings of fact conclude that this turbine, or I should say a turbine similar to that of what Mr. Sowers proposed to construct, did not exceed 5 decibels of noise at a distance of 100 feet. So ultimately, this case did not hinge on noise, but again, hinged on the aesthetics of the turbine.
Is it the case that the Hall's home is located 50 feet from this turbine?
Actually, no, Your Honor. At the time, the record revealed that the proposed site of the turbine was 133 feet from the Hall's property line, and then their house was set back farther than that.
Oh, okay.
Your Honors, also, something cannot be a nuisance if it's specifically contemplated and permitted pursuant to legislative enactment. That concept is found within the case of Johnston versus DeLay, where a gambling institution was allowed pursuant to statute, and the court held because of that, it could not then be a nuisance.
That's an interesting point you raise, Mr. Millsap. I don't see that the parties brief the question of whether in circumstances such as this you have nuisances per se, which are in law nuisances, and nuisances by accident, which are in fact nuisances. In resolving this question, isn't this a nuisance by accident or a nuisance in fact?
Well, the allegation is that it's a nuisance in fact because it doesn't violate any local building ordinance or law. In fact, it's the opposite. NRS 278-250N stated that counties may adopt zoning regulations and then stated those zoning regulations should contemplate the use of wind energy. Washoe County complied when it developed Article 326, and Mr. Sowers made his intent clear throughout the course of the proceeding to comply with Article 326, and thus it cannot then be a nuisance because the county has already deemed it a reasonable use of property. And that's
if this court were to agree with your client's position that this is not a nuisance per se, but is rather a nuisance in fact, then what deference should this court give to the trial court's assessment of the factual unreasonable usage that it reached here?
This court would review the findings of fact under a deferential standard. However, this case doesn't concern whether or not the district court properly found the facts. Instead, it is in regard to whether or not a legal error occurred in the application of nuisance law. And it did, because something can't be a nuisance if the very reason you're complaining it's a nuisance is authorized by statute. And that sentiment's even found in NRS 40.140. In subsection 3, it states, a shooting range does not constitute a nuisance with respect to any noise attributable to the shooting range if the range is in compliance with the provisions of all applicable statutes, ordinances, and regulations concerning noise. So even a shooting range is not a nuisance if it complies with local ordinances and regulations. And that's exactly what Mr. Sauer sought to do. He was intending to comply with local regulations and ordinances and didn't have that opportunity pursuant to the injunction that was issued here, Your Honors.
But there's no comparable statute for wind turbines to the shooting range statute you just read from, correct? And there's no statute that says these can't be a nuisance so long as the county's authorized them.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So you're getting that out of the Johnson and common law cases.
Correct, Your Honor. Correct. The NRS 4140 subsection 3 is just by analogy. By analogy, if the shooting range complies with all statutes and it's not a nuisance, how could a wind turbine then be a nuisance if it complies with the statutes and ordinances as well? Your Honors, I see that I'm out of time. May I briefly conclude?
Certainly.
Your Honors, Mr. Sauer's request that this court dissolve the permanent injunction at issue because this court, this case hinged on nuisance law, and the district court misapplied the law of nuisance by declaring a turbine a nuisance based purely upon aesthetics and in light of the fact that it would have complied with local county ordinances, which would not have made it a nuisance. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Millsap. Mr. Hall, I'm going to add 1 minute to your time because I am going to provide Mr. Millsap with 1 minute of rebuttal time, even though he went through all of his time. So you'll begin with an extra minute.
Thank you, Justice Sato. May it please the court, counsel.
Good morning, Justice Sato. My name is Carl Hall, and I represent Forest Hills Subdivision. I live at 220 Brunswick Mill with my wife, Ann Hall. We bought that property approximately 7-8 years ago. It was vacant land at that time. We designed our house and built that house in that area with the CCNRs in mind. Our house took advantage of the views. We tried to take Mr. Sauer's house out of our view. We have a courtyard basically that points towards Mount Rose, and that's directly where Mr. Sauer's wanted to put his wind turbine. He sent a letter indicating he wanted to put that wind turbine in. We discussed the placement and size of the wind turbine, and I told him that that placement was inappropriate. He indicated that he had a wind turbine in Washoe Valley, which was the one he wanted to put in, the 75-foot wind turbine. I went down and looked at that and saw that it was a huge, towering machine that made a significant amount of noise. And in light of that fact, and in light of the fact that it was in violation of the CCNRs that were originally in place, although those CCNRs didn't specifically address wind turbines, we decided to amend the CCNRs. Now, I'd like to get to one of the points that Justice Hardesty brought up, and that is nuisance in fact and nuisance per se. One problem with the Rankin case is that there were no CCNRs that were going to be discussed in the Rankin case. That, of course, was a commercial wind turbine farm that was off in the distance, and the aesthetic value was essentially the only complaint, aside from some diminution in value, that was pled by the plaintiffs in that case. Interestingly enough, in that case, that was a jury trial, and the judge instructed the jury not to consider aesthetics. But the court, in its opinion, stated that aesthetics may be of value in another case, and it may be appropriate to consider that in light of other factors when determining whether or not there is a nuisance. In our case, we have nuisance per se because there were CCNRs in place. And even though Judge Adams said that the amendment to the CCNRs was inappropriate and unreasonable, the original CCNRs still prohibited the placement of the wind turbine, the size of the wind turbine, and the injunction was granted. I'd like to indicate that NRS 278-02077 and the Washoe County Development Code are consistent with Judge Adams' ruling. The reason it is consistent is because both statutes or ordinances allow for reasonable restrictions on a wind turbine. And I would note that there was an amendment to NRS 2780277 in 2011, which eliminated the reasonable alternative language. So essentially, the legislature realized that there may be problems with the overall statutory scheme. And so it did allow for some room to find a reasonable alternative. And in this particular case, I'd like to indicate that we did discuss reasonable alternatives with Mr. Sowers. When we went to his house, I thought perhaps you could get one that wasn't so tall. Maybe you could put a couple of them. You have sufficient amount of room. Solar power would be a more economically sound choice. But those alternatives were all rejected. And based upon the rejection of those reasonable alternatives, I think that the equities weigh in favor of the Forest Hills community because we did set forth reasonable alternatives. And, of course, the public policy in this particular case is renewable energy. Public policy does not say that we have to have wind farms or wind turbines. The policy is renewable energy. And there were reasonable alternatives for renewable energy presented to the defendants. As a matter of fact, the finding of fact indicate that Mr. Sauer's property was ideally situated for solar power, solar voltaic cells. Conversely, there was no evidence that the wind turbine would even be appropriate. Some of the misstatements, well, when I'm talking about equities, let me also mention that at the outset of this case, now, Mr. Sauer sent a letter indicating that he was going to comply with the CCNRs. And in fact, the findings of fact, conclusions of law, indicate that Mr. Sauer was aware of the CCNRs, a contractual obligation that he had entered into when he purchased the property to abide by the CCNRs. Again, that dovetails back into my nuisance per se argument. But his letter to the community, Forest Hills community, indicated that he was going to comply with the CCNRs. Specifically, he stated it's going to be a medium-sized wind turbine and it's going to be shielded by the trees in my house and it's not going to be a problem visually. So he indicated to us initially that the view and the tone of the community was not going to be interrupted by his introduction of this wind turbine. We found that to be totally untrue. And I'd also like to address the issue regarding whether or not there are other factors to consider in a nuisance in fact situation. With respect to nuisance in fact, not only do we have the view issue, which of course the defense wants to focus on, but the noise issue. With respect to the noise, we never did have a clear indication as to how much noise the machine was going to make. When we went out to the site viewing, the Washoe Valley wind turbine was making horrendous noise. And the people who were going to put it up indicated, well, that's not usually how this thing sounds. However, it was making a lot of noise. I think even more probative with respect to the noise factor is the neighbor who lived out in Washoe Valley. That was Mark Lathrop, who indicated that the wind turbine had been up for only a month. And in that month, he had heard it inside of his house on 8 separate occasions. And just to give you some information regarding the location, Washoe Valley, the area where this wind turbine was located, was a flat area, 5-acre lots, and Mr. Lathrop's property was situated in such a way that it would not obstruct his views. Essentially, he had a bedroom on the side of his house, and that bedroom was the bedroom that faced the wind turbine. The back of his house, the front of his house, did not face the wind turbine. And he was probably 500 feet away. I mean, he was a long distance away, yet he could hear that wind turbine on 8 different occasions. In addition, he mentioned in his testimony that there was shadow flicker. So when we're talking about the nuisance in fact, there are other factors. Shadow flicker was one factor that was considered. And if we look to the Article 326, shadow flicker, noise, placement, height, all of those subjects are subject to review and elimination if, in fact, there is shadow flicker or noise problems. So for the defense to say that there is only aesthetic value to be concerned or to be considered in this particular case must fall on deaf ears, because the Washoe County Development Code requires that those issues be resolved in favor of the damaged party.
Which raises two questions, Mr. Hall, that I have for you, I'd like you to address. The first is this issue ripe for review when the Washoe County has not yet granted a permit or applied any conditions to the construction of it, in a case in which the use is otherwise legally permissible? Shouldn't a court evaluate whether there's a nuisance in fact when it knows what the limiting conditions are to the construction of the structure in the first place? So the question is this case ripe for review yet, because you don't know what those conditions are? And secondly, I think the reason Mr. Millsap is arguing the case in the manner in which he is because Judge Adams' order, frankly, is fairly limited in its findings with respect to factors other than aesthetic reasons for granting the injunction. So what is this court to do when the order seems to be limited to aesthetic issues or to an aesthetic reason?
Right. First of all, with respect to the question of ripeness, yes, this case is ripe because Mr. Sowers has indicated that the wind turbine that he proposed was going to be put in. As a matter of fact, they started construction. With respect to...
It was red tagged. He didn't have a permit.
Right. But I understand that he has resubmitted at least plans for a 65-foot wind turbine in the exact same place. Or a 75-foot wind turbine.
Well, that would be outside of this record.
That would be outside of this record. However, it is right because we discussed reasonable alternatives, and there were no reasonable alternatives that were acceptable to Mr. Sowers. So the wind turbine that he proposed and was going to put in was going to go at that location at the 75-foot height.
But Washoe County might have inserted conditions to the construction of this that would have made it unreasonable to build at all. Sowers may have decided not to construct it if the conditions were too onerous.
I think the problem that I see with that analysis is that if it's put up and there's a problem with ice throw, shadow flicker, and noise, then everybody is damaged, and then you've got another lawsuit. When we have no wiggle room with respect to the size of the wind turbine, location of the wind turbine, and we know that there are going to be issues other than aesthetics with respect to shadow flicker, ice throw, noise, then I think that it is right based upon those factors. Now, your other question?
The court's order seems to be limited. To... aesthetic as the reason for granting the injunction, and yet the record seems to contain other information about diminution in value, noise. There's at least this dispute about noise, but the court doesn't seem to have made findings about those subjects that would be used in conjunction with an aesthetic reason for granting the injunction. So what is this court to do with that?
I think the court can look to the fact that this case is nuisance per se by virtue of the violation of the CC&Rs. So it's a contractual violation, and the court on numerous occasions have upheld CC&Rs.
I would point to those CC&Rs don't no longer exist.
No, the amendment to the CC&Rs no longer exist. That was the 10-foot height limit and the 5 decibel. The original CC&Rs are still in place, and those CC&Rs provide that you cannot change the tone of the community by introducing poles, telephone lines, clothes lines, for example, and I can go through the So those CC&Rs are still in place. So while he did not go into all of those other factors, which include shadow flicker, noise, ice throw, those types of things, he didn't have to because this was a nuisance in se, a nuisance per se case.
Are you conceding that his ostensible finding of nuisance in fact is flawed?
No, I am not. As a matter of fact, I would direct the court's attention to the conclusions of law at the joint appendix 0555, paragraph 7, where it says that the proposed wind turbine on the subject property would be a substantial interference when judged by the appropriate standard of normal persons living in the locality. The proposed wind turbines are unreasonable from an objective point of view. Reasonable persons would consider unreasonable. And my argument is that that encompasses all of the things that were mentioned in the finding of fact, including diminution of value, noise, shadow flicker, ice throw. All of those things were considered during the course of the hearing and the site views, which, of course, those findings are entitled to a deferential review. To go on, the court considered the interests of the community as a whole and weighed the costs and benefits. The court considered the public interest, the CC&Rs, the interest of the defendant, the interest of the plaintiff. The court weighed the prospective neighbors in the area, the effect on the Hall's property, the burden on the defendant, if he does not get the wind turbine. So there were a number of factors that were considered. I think all factors that we have discussed today were considered. So I think the appeal must fail for both reasons, because we do have a nuisance in fact, and we do have nuisance per se. To continue,
Mr. Hall, where in the findings of fact of the court, joint appendix, say, starting at 534 through 539, does the court make a finding of fact that this project will result in a diminution in value, or the resolution of the dispute over the decibel level of the sound? It says in 40, the Washoe County Code has provisions that relate to noise levels, setback requirements, height restrictions, shadow flicker. The defendant did not provide an analysis of the noise level of the machine at the subject site, the shadow flicker, ice throw onto the Hall's property. However, the defendant provided a decibel reading machine at the Washoe Valley site, which reflected that the operating turbine noise from 100 feet away did not exceed 5 dBA above the background sound range. I mean, I don't read that as reaching conclusions, making findings with respect to those issues. If anything, it would suggest a finding that's on noise that's contrary to your position.
That's why I made reference to Mr. Lathrop. And I, with respect to the wind issue, there was, I think, testimony on both sides. You had Mr. Trevor Lloyd indicating that one decibel level. You had the experts representing Mr. Sowers indicating a different decibel level, and then you don't have any clear indication as to what machine they were going to put up, because that seemed to be a moving target. That's why I referred the court to Mr. Lathrop, who had some actual experience during that month with the wind problem. And with respect to the amended findings of fact, the court found that the original CC&Rs have height, noise, and other limitations that prohibit a homeowner in the Forest Hill subdivision from impairing the attractiveness of the property, the desired tone of the community, and the continuing activity which would be deemed a nuisance. In addition, he makes reference to Sally Baldecki, who talks about the diminution of property value. If you look at the testimony from David Kahn, he also says that the reason they don't put wind turbines up, or he hasn't, in his six-year experience as an expert in renewable energy, is because there are these types of problems and objections, which are, so it's fraught with these types of issues. Which brings me back to NRS 278-02077 and the Washoe County Development Code, which allow for reasonable restrictions.
And I'm going to ask you to conclude your comments because you're now beyond your time. But if you would conclude at this point, thank you.
In conclusion, I'd ask you to deny the appeal based upon a reasonable interpretation of the statutory law in conjunction with the CCNRs and findings of fact, conclusions of law submitted by Judge Adams. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Mr. Millsap, 1 minute in rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to Mr. Lathrop, I'd like to direct the court to the record JA311, where Mark Lathrop stated that sound was not bothersome to him at all. So the gentleman in Washoe Valley was not bothered by the similar turbine sound. Moreover, it appears that there's argument with regard to CCNRs and how that interplays with this court's determination. But this case is very unique in terms of the application of CCNRs because Nevada has made clear that there can be no CCNR that unreasonably restricts the construction of wind turbines. And that's found in both NRS 111.2395 and NRS 278.02077. And both of those statutes forbid the unreasonable restrictions. And that's what we have here. The district court properly concluded that the amendment to the CCNRs was an unreasonable restriction because of its height requirement. And moreover, the generalized CCNRs are almost always going to be an unreasonable restriction because they're so overbroad and generalized, arguably, they'd foreclose the construction of, Your Honor, I see that I'm out of time. May I briefly
conclude? Complete your thought, yes.
They would foreclose the construction of any turbine because arguably any turbine might cause a diminution in property value or any turbine might impair the attractiveness of the neighborhood. And therefore, those overbroad generalized CCNRs cannot be reasonable constrictions because they're too broad in scope. For those reasons, Your Honor, Mr. Sowers requests that this court dissolve the injunction at issue and allow him to proceed in accordance with Washoe County Development Code, Article 326. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Millsap. Mr. Hall, we peppered all of both of you with numerous questions, and we appreciate your frank and appropriate responses. This matter will stand submitted.